Welcome to another episode of Fit to Teach, where every Monday we provide evidence-based health and wellness information to support teachers and school employees on their wellness journey. My name is Kyle Pfaffenbach. I'm an associate professor of health and human performance at Eastern Oregon University. And the director of the EOU Lab for Exercise Assessment and Performance, which we call the LEAP. I'm joined by LEAP intern Nathan Marshall. What's up, Nathan?
What's up, Kyle?
For Fit to Teach each week, we typically provide a summary of a research paper, but we're transitioning between talking about specific research papers and just talking about health topics. So that's what we're doing this week. So we're going to cover some aspect of health and wellness, and we also always want to tie that to achievable action items that teachers and staff can focus on for the week. So the goal is that by trying these activities throughout each week, that healthy habits will accumulate and you can find out what health and wellness activities are a good fit for you. So let's get into it. So originally, we were going to do another paper on resistance training and the benefits of resistance training. And I thought that was a really interesting paper. It was about basically the cardiovascular benefits of fitness training, especially in aging adults. And they use these like really cool techniques, and they were looking at kind of the ability to rapidly change blood pressure through modulating heart rate in people that were lifting versus adults that don't lift. And even though I just summarized it.
Don't spoil it.
Even though I just summarized it and teased it, Nathan sadly shot this idea down this week, and he's nodding yes. And he was like, I feel like we've already talked about weightlifting. And I was like, I think you're right. Yeah. So ultimately, I agree with you. I think we know that strength training is such a critical thing to do for overall health and wellness. And we talked about a whole bunch of different ways that you can do it and why it's important and those sorts of things. So if you're new to the program, go back and listen to some of our previous episodes and get caught up on those, how to implement resistance training into your life in a sustainable and productive way. And so when he shot the paper down and he said that, I said, what do you want to talk about? And he goes, and then he talked about this thing that we've been discussing from a nutrition standpoint. So I'm going to let him introduce that, and then we'll be off and running.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk about blood sugar, and this is something my mom brought up. And again, talking about her again. Shout out, mom. Because she's great. Because she always gives me ideas of what we want to cover.
Marshall. It's such a big influence on the pod.
Yes. Okay. So one thing we talked about in nutrition, sports nutrition, was we talked about blood sugar spikes and how eating carbs throughout the day, like how that raises blood sugar, then your body's response to that, insulin response, stuff like that. And so in terms of weight loss and maintaining progress that you've made, it's important to acknowledge like your timing of your carbohydrate and sugar consumption. Mm-hmm. And that's what we want to talk about today.
Yeah, I think it's a great topic and it's an interesting one. And we touch on some of these nutrition things, but even if you talk about it once, twice, three times, it takes like multiple times of going over things before things really set in, and certain, especially from an application standpoint, like how does this have meaning in my life and how do I actually implement it into my life? And yeah, I think this is a great question. And I think for me, when I'm talking to individuals who are trying to learn about this and appreciate this topic, the first place that I start from an education standpoint is the impact of insulin. Like insulin is, for most people, if they have an idea of what insulin is, they think of it just in terms of diabetes and either type 1 diabetes or insulin dependent, where people have to give themselves shots and things like that, or type 2 diabetes in terms of insulin resistance or type 2 diabetes. And people have different ideas of what it is and what it does, but mostly insulin is just thought of as this thing that regulates blood sugar. And it's so much more than that. Insulin is a super powerful hormone. And the reason why insulin has such a central role in the body is because insulin only gets released from the pancreas when certain conditions are true. The first condition is that there's a rise in blood sugar. The second condition is when the body is at rest. So when you're at rest and you take on a bunch of sugar, and that could be carbohydrates, that can be rice, that can be pasta, it could be soda, it could be like any type of sugar, there's going to be a rise in blood sugar. There's a release in insulin. And in the presence of insulin tells your body, we are at rest and we have lots of energy in the system. And it's like the good energy. It's like the jet fuel energy, right? And let's save all the other energy, i.e., fat, and let's use this energy and store this and try and get it into the system and make use of it because this is the good stuff. This is what we like. But when you overconsume carbohydrates and you overconsume sugar and you don't consider timing, what can end up happening is that you're rising blood sugar a lot, you're rising insulin a lot throughout the day, and eventually the system starts to go, hey, I don't need all this energy. I don't need to grow. I don't want all this growth signaling. And so certain tissues start to become resistant to insulin. So you keep spiking blood sugar, or the person that's eating keeps spiking blood sugar. Insulin keeps getting released, but the tissues stop responding to that insulin. And that's what starts the path towards insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes.
But that's pretty, it has to be over time for a
Of
long period of time.
course. Yeah, this is why it's called a chronic disease. It's cardiovascular. It's like obesity, cardiovascular disease, these types of things. You don't wake up one morning and it just, all of a sudden you have atherosclerosis. It occurs over a long period of time. But it's hard to know because we don't feel when we're having too much high blood sugar and when we're having too much insulin, we don't feel that. We track it with things like hemoglobin A1C or fasting blood glucose levels or those sorts of things. And we have cutoffs for those. This is why going and seeing, doing yearly physicals and checking in on these things and doing stuff like this is really important. Because as we track these things, but a lot of times people will go and they'll say, oh, your fasting blood glucose is starting to get a little high. You should keep an eye on that. And then what does that mean? Like, how do I keep an eye on it? Glucose monitors are like pretty available and stuff like that. But the thing is that there's a lack of interpretation and direction for what can you actually implement to deal with this. And a lot of people are dealing with it. One side is just start taking drugs that we know can lower A1C and lower, and there's some really popular drugs and some new drugs, and some of these things are amazing. And they're so I'm not like anti-pharmaceutical in that sense, but there's also a bunch of lifestyle things that people can do. And one of the things that they can do is start paying attention how often they are eating carbohydrates outside of meals. And that includes sodas and candy and snacks. And even fruit as a snack. A lot of people think fruit is a snack, yet fruit's really healthy for you. There's lots of vitamins and minerals and micronutrients and things like that. Fruit also has a lot of calories typically and a lot of sugar. And if you just randomly eat a banana as a snack in the middle of the day, you're getting a pretty good sized blood glucose spike. That's going to lead to an insulin release. And then because insulin is this growth hormone that is released when we have high blood sugar and are at rest. The another thing that insulin does is it suppresses fat breakdown and it promotes fat storage. So when people are overeating in calories as a whole and they're chronically spiking insulin too many times throughout the day, spiking blood sugar too many times throughout the day. A lot of people say, oh, excess carbs turn into fat. We have the biochemical processes to do that, but it doesn't happen in humans to the same degree that it does in other animals. Like we don't gain a lot of adiposity, for example, through that. But what does happen is that we just don't burn the fat that we have and we store the fat that we're consuming because we always have the energy source that we like, which is carbohydrates.
Yeah, I think for me, just an anecdote, when I was learning this, like this was one of the first exercise science classes I took here. And I didn't have much knowledge on nutrition. I knew what healthy foods were and stuff like that. But I always thought of it, these things in like kind of absolutes. Caloric deficit is how you lose weight. Caloric surplus is how you gain weight. But I never thought of the timing. And I always thought of carbs as like how many grams you eat per day. never the timing of it. And so it was super cool to be like, okay, here's why snacking, binge eating, drinking liquid calories can lead to weight gain, even though when you look at the label, it says only 60 calories. Okay, that's not that much. But in reality, this whole insulin response, it's a big contributor to why people struggle to lose weight.
Absolutely. And it's one of the reasons why higher protein diets, lower carbohydrate diets work for a lot of people. Now, the side effect of having a low carbohydrate diet is that energy levels can be affected. And some people are more sensitive to this than other people. And so, what we're really talking about here is try some of these things. Try and limit the amount of carbohydrates that you consume to just 3 meals per day. Yeah, one of the things that I think is not a good strategy for a lot of people is to consume liquid calories because liquid calories, they get digested really quickly, they cause a high spike in blood sugar, and they don't make us feel full. And so I would say try and avoid juice and smoothies and things like that. But if you do want like a little bit of orange juice, make sure you eat it with breakfast and you're not just drinking it as, yeah.
That's what I wanted to say too, is like the thing that stuck with me as well, because the biggest thing was like limiting your blood sugar spikes throughout the day. That was like the biggest thing I got from that conversation we had. The second thing was like pairing your carbohydrate intake with like
Meals.
not just, but also like you gave an example of eating dessert like almost right after dinner rather than an hour or two later. Because a lot of people are like, okay, I'm gonna let my food digest. And I do that all the time too. Okay, I'm gonna make dinner at 6:30 and then like at 8 when I'm watching TV, I'll have some ice cream. Versus that perspective, kind of okay, you're not cheating the system per se, but you can eat that ice cream right after dinner and you're limiting, am I going, is this,
Yeah, absolutely.
yeah.
And I think you get there's a couple benefits to this. One is if you know you're going to eat ice cream immediately after dinner, you actually end up consuming less calories at dinner because you want to enjoy the ice cream that you're going to eat,
Yeah,
right?
totally.
The second thing is that you're packaging your dinner and dessert all under one insulin curve and one kind of nutrient curve. And we want to limit the number of times that we do that in a day because excess growth factor signaling and excess insulin signaling, like you said, it can make it really hard to lose weight, keep weight off, and there's some other more interesting kind of molecular things that can occur with too much growth signaling. And so if we can minimize that to it can be really helpful. So maybe you have 3 meals a day, but one of those meals doesn't have carbs. And then you focus on 2 meals where you get your carbs for energy and you get your dessert and things like that. And so you're enjoying the food that you're eating. You have energy for exercise and working out, but you're not constantly like spiking these, getting these insulin and sugar spikes and then sugar crashes oftentimes, especially with highly absorbable versions of it.
Yeah. I think too, this is one thing that I've started doing a lot more is like getting protein in like when I didn't usually since I've been. So like for me, like my mom just got me this super nice protein powder. Shout out mom, because she gets it wholesale. So it's just like for me, it's like just putting protein powder in literally everything. Like protein powder in yogurt, protein powder in oatmeal,
Yeah,
protein
it's
powder
interesting.
when I eat my fruit. And I've actually felt like so much better. Like I feel just more full and satiated because like I wouldn't say I'm a snacker, but like I'm someone who eats a lot of food. And so like when I get home, like I just grab everything I can and just eat it. Cause like I'm pretty sensitive to like blood sugar. I know my blood sugar is low. And so I think for me that's really helped is like being like, okay, eating protein with this is gonna not just make me feel more full, but also minimize the not negative effects, but like the blood sugar spike that
Yeah,
I've
what's
had.
interesting about this is that when you eat mixed meals, not just like sugar on its own. So fat doesn't make us feel full, but it does slow down digestion. So you can reduce the kind of insulin spike and the blood glucose spike from a banana with a little bit of peanut butter, for example, and that's effective. But there's not a lot of quality protein in peanut butter. It's mostly fat, and then there's obviously no protein or fat in a banana. It's just all sugar. And so that's still not an ideal snack because it's really high in calories and it's just not going to make you feel full. And because the macronutrient that makes us feel the most full and keeps us the most full between meals is protein. So one of the reasons why people are successful higher protein diets, and when I say that, I'm intentionally saying higher protein diet and not a low carb diet. But if you're emphasizing getting protein, like you're saying, on a meal-to-meal basis, you oftentimes will end up wanting to snack less. And it's not as hard to resist those urges of, I just got home, I'm super hungry, I just want to eat. I don't know. My weakness is salt and vinegar chips and Cheez-Its. There's always Cheez-Its in my house
Well,
for
they're
my
so
kids,
good.
and they're so good.
Yeah.
And you get home from work and you're like, yeah, I'll just have a couple. And then you like, we call it the floodgates. We open the floodgates. And the thing, like, those things don't satisfy you. You're just eating them and you have the desire to eat them. I really do notice, okay, if I take the time and I pack my lunch and I bring it here and I take my post-exercise drink, I come here. Once I start feeling hungry, I get my high protein lunch here.
Yeah, I think that's what I was going to talk about next is like if you eat at 1 and then, dinner is until 6:30, you get home from work whenever. And it's like you grab the chips out and you're like you eat them, but you're not going to get full. You eat another handful and then you're making dinner and you're still hungry. And it's like maybe you've only had, a handful each time, but that's 3 servings and that's 3 blood sugar spikes. And I
If you're eating them all, so blood sugar goes up and comes down depending on the glycemic index of the food. It takes about an hour, but it's more of like this idea of like mini spikes. Like you're just like, as soon as it starts coming back down, now it's going back up and it's coming down and then it's going back up. And it's so there's just this constant drip of high blood sugar for an extended period of time, which is going to require high insulin for an extended period of time if you're at rest. And this is different with exercise. Exercise is a suppressor of insulin. So it's different with exercise. And if people like this, email us and let us know because we can do more episodes on this. But the thing that you described there, I think has a lot to do with cues and like almost circadian rhythm. Like we get into these habits where you walk into the house and all of a sudden you get hungry, but you weren't hungry before. It's like a Pavlovian response. You start getting in that environment. And have you ever done this? So people that have to eat a lot and have traditionally had like high metabolism stuff, I'll go and look at the cupboard like 3 times and it's like a tick where I'm hungry and I'll look at the cupboard and it's, oh, we're out of like palatable food that I wanted, like junk food. And there's nothing in there. And I'll literally go back 15 minutes later and be like, and like you're testing to see if anything like looks good. We literally use that type of terminology. Does this look good? And you can reduce a lot of that and break those cycles a little bit easier. It's not just like willpower. There's all kinds of neurochemistry that goes along with this and hedonic centers. And it's really interesting and complicated. But one of the things is you can reduce some of those things if you're getting enough protein. And if you're packaging your meals, and if you understand the reasoning why, and if you increase your mindfulness around not mindless eating, but I'm going to focus on every single one of these Cheez-Its, for example, or I'm going to focus on that. And so we talk about this a lot because I notice it. I don't notice it when I'm doing it because it's mindless, right? And I'm not being mindful, but I notice it when like my kids walk around and eat food. And it's, I try and catch that and say, no, hey, if you're going to be eating food, I want you to sit down and really enjoy the food. Right. So they'll go and they'll do their dishes and then they'll grab a piece of chocolate. And then they want to start playing right away while their mouth is full of like a piece of Hershey's chocolate. And I'm like, no, come sit down, open it up, enjoy it, make sure it's done. And now you can go play,
It's
if that
fair.
makes sense.
Yeah, it's fair. I still do when I go home. I just make like carb bowls. So I'll raid the pantry and grab every kind of chip and grab like a handful and just put in the bowl and eat the whole thing. So it's like Kyle said, his guilty pleasure is salt and vinegar. And I still do this and I know what it's doing. The
Are you talking about home, like the house, or when you go home, home, like to
when I
your
go, no,
parents' home?
not I don't buy snacks here
Exactly.
because I can't. Like I'm a bro, I could spend my money on other things as a college student. Yeah. But when I go home, my parent, they buy you say healthy snacks, like they're good snacks, but I still just load up with every possible thing. There's like
Yeah, but
there's candy, graham crackers, jalapeno chips. I like those pretzel chips with butter or peanut butter in them. And like there's and they're all in one bowl.
100%.
And
Anderson's, that's all.
I'll just destroy them. And so it's but it's funny because it's I know what's that's doing metabolically.
But that association hits you when you go to your house and you're in that environment. And see, this gets into this whole other topic of like food as being more than just fuel. It's like social cue, it's all these things. And unfortunately, like manufacturers and advertisers have turned that into what used to be a really special occasion. Like once in a while, I go home and I eat this huge bowl of thing. And what they realize is if we just made that available all the time, people would get addicted to it and people would want to. So we don't have like special occasions anymore around. We eat plates of food the size of Thanksgiving dinner on a regular basis.
Yeah, no, 100%. I do it every day.
And the whole point of those types of things is they were like once in a while and super special because like resources were limited. And it's both good and bad. Like resources aren't limited. And so people aren't dying of like under eating in America, but we have a bunch of chronic health problems because calories are just too available and too cheap.
Yeah, I think this is an interesting question. I know you talked about this a little bit actually, but as a kid, like when my mom would bring me snacks, like she'd always give me the option for protein. Like she'd bring me turkey or like chicken, and I hated it. I would never just not hate it. And like now it's, I was obviously appreciative, but I just mean like as a kid, I would never just grab a piece of cold cut turkey and just eat it. I thought that was gross. No, I'm serious. And then, so as a kid, I just feel like I got in the habit of, like, for me, snacking was eating chips.
Of course, because our brain loves carbohydrates. And when it gets these patterns around carbohydrates and when it knows it can get them and they're only a thin cupboard board away from, it's gonna be like those sorts of things. And making sure kids get enough protein and making sure adults get enough protein is a big challenge. Protein's expensive. It's hard to know what is good for you. Even when you get meat, you have to try and find high quality meat. It's hard to find high quality meat at a good price. All these different types of things, right? Yeah, but it's a really good, your mom had like good intuition on those standpoint. And it's surprising to me that you even had like an opinion about it, like that you even had a thought about it. Because
But I was like pretty sensitive to, I don't know. I'd like texture stuff a little bit. Like I wasn't picky, but
my kids will, and this probably makes us weird, not normal, but my kids will be like, they'll literally ask, is it too late for this? And if I say yes, they know it's because it has too much carbs. And then they'll say, was it too late for a cheese stick? And say, no, that's a good bedtime snack. They'll say, is it too late for an apple? It doesn't mean apples are bad for you. It means like giving a kid a huge like ball of sugary fruit right before you're going to try and get him to bed might not be the, like, might not give me the best chance of getting him to bed.
Yeah, that's better than candy.
What are we doing here?
Yeah, I'm no, I'm just,
What are
but I'm
we
just, I guess, in
doing?
like in reference is because that's how I grew up was like my parents were always like, you can pretty much eat whatever was there. And there was never candy there, but there was apples there. So I was the kid that was like, okay, I'm gonna just, because I didn't know, obviously I didn't know any of this. Like I didn't grow up with, so I was just like, so
But I mean, the
there's
fact that your
levels.
mom was like, yeah, take this piece of turkey.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds gross, but it's not. We do that all the time.
No, I know. And now I'm recognizing, like now if there's chicken breast in the fridge, I'll just eat that up and that'll be my snack. And then I'll have
Exactly.
it for dinner too, with rice and whatever else. So it's, and I think that, and like, I know I feel, but it doesn't taste objectively as good
Of course
at 3
not,
p.m.
man. Of course
Yeah.
not. Of course not. Salt, sugar,
Yeah.
and fat, man. Like when you put
Yeah.
those all three together, go for the for those of you that want to read a little bit more about the idea of like why junk food is addictive. There was an article written in the New York Times a couple of years ago. We read it in our class. This is a while ago. But the title of the article, you can find it online. It's called Extraordinary Science of Addictive Junk Food. And they literally go into a lab. Like Doritos, there's no part of a Dorito that occurs in nature. And arguably, Doritos are the most addictive food that is like one of the most addictive foods that ever been created.
So
And
good.
when you read the stories about it, I remember reading that Doritos, a modern Dorito, takes significantly less chews now than a previous iteration of Doritos did a couple years ago. Because what they realized is they could get people to eat more of them if they could get people to eat more of them if they could get it to a consistency that would initiate their swallow reflex faster.
It's crazy. Remember you telling us this?
Yeah. So that's like the level at which they're getting And they literally, like, the way this article talks about it is like all these food executives are sitting around a table talking about what they call the stomach share, which is like how much food they can force down you before you say, I'm full. And they want to maximize that because these are publicly traded companies that have a commitment to shareholders. It's crazy.
It's good perspective. It all like when I heard that the first time, I'd almost like, think it mad, but it's like you think it's weird to think of them like you're the product or like you're the, you know, it's like they think of you as like
100%.
it's just like it's
Yeah.
weird and it's like frustrating.
Yeah.
For me, that worked in the sense of not protesting it, but it's like I don't want to be part of that.
Exactly.
I'm gonna
Yeah.
like do something and
And it's really just an amount of mindfulness. Since you heard that, have you eaten a Dorito? See? But are you,
I don't buy it. I get the, but they're my ski snack.
but do you like, you think about it when you're eating
Of
them, even
course.
when you're skiing,
No, of course.
right?
I think about every food that I buy. I think about how it,
But the
I,
thing is like you're when you build that, for me, that didn't take the joy. Like learning this stuff doesn't take the joy out of eating. It gives me mindfulness and it puts me in a state of, and it's funny because I get, so I try and eat healthy. I have a background in nutrition and I share this information. I'll give talks and things like that. And I teach nutrition class and I'll get students that would be like, I remember one time a student was like, do you ever eat anything unhealthy? Do you ever just want to have like a, and my wife always like laughs because she's, if they've ever seen you like eat Cheez-Its or salt and vinegar chips, they'd be like, this stuff's good. But you have to realize that it's there to make you do it excessively. And you want to be able to say, okay, I'm going to be really mindful about this and put these guardrails around it and figure out a way to do this. And it's not dissimilar to things like drinking one beer socially versus being like blackout,
No.
to binge drinking or to being an alcoholic. So there's like this whole, yeah. And so you can balance these things. And I know we've gone way over, but I think this is a super interesting discussion.
I think so too. I think it'll be, for me, it was like one of the most applicable things from nutrition class that I could like, and it was easy. It's just like being to get down to like the point of it, it's just be mindful of what you're eating. It's what I'm thinking about right
Yeah.
now.
And also ask hard questions, especially around things that you're being told are like foods that are really good for you, that a lot of people want to drink that aren't going to fill you up, that they've been pre-digested for you and they're not going to activate your hunger signals because calories don't really make you feel full. Like the content of your food makes you feel full. Get your raw vegetables, get your protein, get your high quality, healthy sources of protein. Modulate your carbohydrates, keep carbohydrates to meals, and yeah, those are really good steps. Cool. All right. Thanks for listening to Fit to Teach, where we provide insights into health and wellness for teachers and staff each week. I guess this is going to be up on a Monday, and then the following Friday, we'll have a classroom to calm, and that's going to be with Nathan and our new leap aid, student aid, Edgar. So that's going to be their job next week. I'm traveling. And so we'll be back in a couple of weeks and talk to you later.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thanks.